for good.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm starting to look at these podcasts as 1 week closer to moving into my house. So that's the,
Oh, there you go.
Yes, I know. I was thinking tonight, ooh, I don't know how many podcasts until I move, but it's got to be a finite number.
I bet it does. This is show number 98. We need to come up with something spectacular for show number 100, like they do with the sitcoms, you know, that last to 100 shows, or the dramas, you know, how they have a big celebration.
100, I can't believe that.
I know.
Let's give that some thought. I guess we have 2 weeks.
2 weeks. So we'll think of something really fun and exciting for that. But I will tell you this, and I did not talk to you about this already. I almost told you on Friday, and then I thought, oh, I'm just going to save it for the show. But so many parents have recommended the podcast specifically when you do an internet search and look for teachmetotalk.com or look for Laura Mize or whatever. The podcast has been recommended on parent blog after parent blog after parent blog. And I was so excited when Johnny found that and was reading me some of the comments and showing me some of that. So I just want to say thanks to all of our listeners who are recommending our little show here to other parents who are seeking information about their late-talking toddlers or who have questions or who are working through their whole therapy process. And so many moms had such heartfelt compliments on there, and they said things like, you know, I didn't really understand it until I listened to their shows. Several moms said, start back at the very beginning. You know, go back to show number one and then listen forward. And I think, oh, no, don't do that.
You saved that. You didn't tell me that, Laura, because you knew I'd probably say, oh, you're kidding. You mean there are people listening? I quit. I'm not making it to the 100th show.
It would probably freak you out.
Even when you
I was thinking, oh, no. But it was so nice to read. And, you know, I've gotten so many compliments through the fall doing the conferences with speech-language pathologists and developmental interventionists or whatever they happen to call you people in the state that I'm in, you know, early and special instructors, early interventionists, whatever. And, you know, it's always a shock when unsolicited somebody comes up and says, gosh, I've been listening to your show for about a year, or I've been listening for 6 months, or I found your show early on, and it's so funny. You know, I feel like I know you and Kate after listening to you for weeks and weeks and weeks. And so I've gotten to hear a lot of that, but you really haven't.
Which is
and then to read
as well, because my stage fright comes to the surface when I hear about people actually listening. See, I can get away with just a simple phone conversation, but when somebody's downloading it and listening to it, that makes me nervous. But that's okay. I don't have to see them,
so I
can stand it.
Well, I know that you are a praise junkie like me, so I just thought I would pass it along.
That I am.
And, yeah.
I'm not a gift
all
to
of us
people
are,
like you, however.
What? What'd you say?
I said I am not a gifted speaker like you, however. I'm absolutely paranoid about public speaking, so that's why I joke about.
Well, this is just our phone call. This is just the podcast.
Right. I know.
Apparently
I have
other people listen to.
Shows with that philosophy, so obviously I can maintain that thought, and that's what I'm going to do.
And you know where we're really recommended are on parent blogs internationally, where moms and dads don't have great access to early intervention services like we have in the United States, and where they might meet with a speech-language pathologist or a developmental team or something really infrequently, and maybe just to get an initial evaluation, and then sometimes they pretty much say, good luck, we'll see you in a year, mm-hmm. or we have to wait until he's preschool age to address these issues. And fortunately in our country we don't have those kinds of systems, although now with all the state budgetary crises we may start to hear more and more of that. But it just reading through some of those things, sometimes we're what those parents are getting in terms of professional advice. Now, that's a little scary even to me because I think, oh, my goodness, we have an enormous responsibility here.
Well, those
who
are
really
callers,
educate.
They need to get the cheap international calling so they could call the show
yeah.
and actually give them real advice personally. But, you know, it is true, Laura. We take for granted that, you know, and our system is certainly not perfect. But and really,
right.
the states vary even amongst themselves. In the United States, some states are more generous with services. Other states, they have different eligibility requirements. And so, but in general.
Well, you know,
I'm
let me just interrupt that for 1 second. Hold your thought, and then I just want to say, like, and it's been very enlightening to go to these different states and hear the different eligibility requirements, and we just would assume that, you know, your own particular state, you know, that that must be how it is everywhere. But, again, so many states are changing the criteria based on their budget concerns. Missouri, you have to have a 50% developmental delay to qualify.
Oh, really,
isn't that awful?
Very
so
delayed, it, yes. Very delayed.
Yeah,
they,
quite
they
delayed. And so they don't have
the more, most severe children. And that's
right.
sad, really. Yeah.
It
They're
is very sad. And so, mm-hmm. I know. So pick up your thought. I just wanted to interject that before I forgot it.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing.
Do you remember
now,
what you were saying?
That, I'm going to let that go. Oh, I was just saying that Kentucky, for whatever reason, is actually pretty darn good. And even though the states vary amongst themselves about all kinds of different things, in general, you know, the early intervention program across the United States is pretty darn good. Services are pretty timely, and there's a variety of professionals available in most areas. And as you say, in other countries, sometimes what they get is see in a year, or even if there is happens to be some therapy available, it may be a 6 or 9 or 12 month wait. And if you're really worried
right.
about your child, 6 to 9 to 12 months really isn't an acceptable answer, but it's the answer they get. So,
well, it's an eternity. And so many moms are listening to the podcast because they need one real diagnostic information, even if it doesn't apply specifically to their child, at least they're understanding terms like receptive language delay and social communication disorder. And, you know, we don't use a lot of jargon purposefully because we're not academics. We're real-life clinicians who work with moms and dads. But so many, that's another thing that they said is, you know, reading through some of those comments is I didn't really understand what some of those words meant until I listened to a podcast, you know, about it, or until I heard them talk about it week after week. You know, the professional who evaluated my child didn't explain it to me in a way that I could understand it. And then listening to the show, not only did I understand, you know, exactly what they meant by that term, then they told me real life ways that I could address it at home. And so it was just so enlightening to read that and so heartwarming.
Well, you
just might have
to forward a few of those my way. I could read a couple of those.
Well, just search it. Just search it, yeah.
Search our show.
But I'll have to get Johnny to send that to you. But it was really neat. But again, tonight we're addressing two moms that have written into the website, teachmetotalk.com, they're on my website, and written in, you know, there's a section where moms can read an article and then leave a comment. And so one mom is from Ireland, from Belfast. Belfast is in Ireland, right?
Correct, yeah.
Johnny's really
geographic skills would confirm that one. Yep.
I knew that. I said that as a joke. I knew Johnny would roll his eyes when I said it. Okay. But she's written several times. And so let's just kind of read through her questions. And then I've given her some answers, but there's certainly, we can certainly talk about more of those or expand those written responses and talk about what she's concerned about. She says, "Hi, I have a 26-month-old son. My only concerns are that he seems in his own world sometimes, and he talks in his own language. He says about 20 regular words and takes me by the hand to get what he wants. He has great eye contact, loves his daddy swinging him and throwing him up in the air. He gives lots of cuddles and loves children. He doesn't mind noise and loves new things and new places. He sometimes ignores people when they talk to him and says bye when he feels like it. He can follow instructions like close the door, get me the book, etc. And so I wrote her back and asked if he was using, you know, because she said he's talking in his own language. And we usually describe that with a professional term that we call jargon. And so I started talking with her about that and, you know, explaining that jargon is usually an in-between step between single words and phrases. When you do an internet search of jargon or when you look in a professional, like a textbook about jargon, it talks about that that usually happens in children between 12 and 18 months. And usually when children's vocabularies get big enough, they drop the jargon for real words. And again, some kids don't really have that very much in their language development, and some kids have it a lot. I've shared before that our daughter, who's now almost 15, had lots and lots of jargon, and our boys didn't really do that much. Did your girls have lots of jargon, Kate?
Neither one very much, no. But I have a niece who my sister swore she was speaking in Chinese because it was...
Yeah.
I mean, just long conversations. But my kids really didn't.
Yeah.
Not really.
But our boys didn't really do that either.
Do it with through work. I mean, it's pretty common.
It is pretty common. And you know, in my conferences, Early Speech Language Development, Taking Theory to the Floor, I talk a lot about jargon and why that's or kind of the red flags that can be associated with jargon too. And this little guy might fall into some of that because excessive jargon use after 2 is usually associated with receptive language or processing problems, meaning that he's not really consistently linking lots of meanings with words. And he knows he's supposed to talk because he hears all these grown-ups talk and these long extended sentences and paragraphs, and he wants to fill in that same kind of speech in conversation, yet he doesn't have the vocabulary to support it. And so Nancy Kaufman said this in a conference a long, long time ago that I attended. She said, when a child is doing that excessively, after 2, you need to take a close look at how a child is processing and understanding language, because that's really a red flag that may not be moving along like you would want it to. Now, while you can look at some kids, you know, the whole delayed versus disordered, if you're looking at a kid that he's delayed, meaning that all of the milestones are met and in the typical developmental sequence that we would like to see it, he's just behind versus he maybe has some skills at higher levels or his rate of development is atypical, meaning that he's got some higher level things and missing some lower level skills, or the sounds that he's producing aren't what we would typically hear. You know, we talked a few weeks ago about the grandmother that I met in Louisiana who said that the vocalizations that her 17 or 18-month-old granddaughter was using were like lateral S's, like, you know, we don't really hear that sound in typically developing speech in infants and toddlers. And so, again, you kind of look at it whether it's typical versus atypical, and that gives you an idea of whether it's just a delay versus a disorder. And, again, delays mean that a child, if we were looking at this kid, would understand language, would be pretty social, would follow lots of directions, and that would give us a hint as to whether his jargon is there just because he's kind of globally delayed with language or whether his jargon is there because it indicates that there's some other kind of issue going on. And again, without seeing this little guy, we can't really say for sure. His mom says that he's following some instructions, but to me, those seem like really basic directions that we would expect more from a 15-month-old or an 18-month-old versus a 26-month-old when I'm just reading that. Did you get that impression too, Kate?
I did, and I see that happen a lot in practice, is that because a child can follow a few simple commands that they hear very routinely, close the door, put it down, go get your bottle, you know, throw the diaper away or throw anything away, parents assume he understands everything I say. And it may be that he understands a fairly limited amount of what mom or dad are saying. It's just he's heard those enough that those, in fact,
right,
are meaningful. But beyond that, and the other clue for me, as you read this, Laura, was the fact that she says he seems like he's in his own world sometimes. And
right.
anytime I see a kid that I'm working with that I feel like he's in his own world sometimes, and sometimes parents will verbalize that and sometimes they don't. And sometimes I'll verbalize it and sometimes I don't based on the situation, but I certainly see kids that I think he's not really taking in what I'm presenting. You know, I'm losing
right.
him. It's pretty obvious he's really not paying attention to what I'm doing or what I'm saying. And my thought about that is he's in his own world. And when I see a kid who appears to be in his own world, almost always there are going to be some receptive language problems because he is in his own little world sometimes.
Yeah, and because of that tuning out or ignoring or whatever parents would tend to call it, he hasn't had enough experience with language.
Total disinterest. You know, mom's talking, he's running the other direction. You know, she's bending over to get his attention, and he's fixated on the blocks that are in front of him. You know, it's pretty obvious when kids are listening, they're looking at you, they're responding in some way, maybe not verbally, a nonverbal child wouldn't, but he smiles, he widens his eyes, he responds, you know, almost instantly to what you're saying. He somehow, there's some indication, sometimes just through gesture or facial expression, but you know he's listening, he's taking it in, and you also really
right, and
you know when they're not.
Yeah, and there's, I was going to say, you know when they're not, and there is that qualitative difference. And it's so funny to me sometimes when I'll listen to a parent talk about this or I'll see somebody try to say, oh, gosh, I saw that list for autism for toddlers, and every toddler acts like that. And I say, uh-uh. You must not have been around a lot of typically developing toddlers, because sometimes toddlers can appear to kind of be doing their own thing, but as soon as you try to engage them, they're right there with you. And certainly if you have a cool toy that they are interested in, there's not the whole stand on your head and break out in a sweat. It doesn't take that much of an attempt to get them to want to interact with you. It's just natural, like it would be with an older child or with an adult. It's just assumed that they're going to interact with you. And so when we hear these moms say, or hear a mom say, he's in his own world, it's an automatic red flag to me, thinking at the very minimum he's going to have some receptive language issues because he has not tuned in for whatever reason, you know, whether it's associated with autism or just, you know, an isolated sensory processing thing, you know, that he has not had enough experience really linking meanings with what someone says. So conceptually, you know, he's not ready to use words yet because words don't mean what they should to him, and certainly not to a 26-month-old. So we had the kind of that initial exchange where she said that first thing, and then I said, you know, children don't start to really use phrases until they have a pretty extensive single-word vocabulary, meaning they're closer to 50 words. And that, again, that's just based on research with typical development. And so lots of moms will hear a child do a lot of jargon and assume that they're talking in real words and talking in sentences, and just their speech sounds are substituted or omitted or, you know, just difficult to understand. And so even some therapists get kind of fooled by that and think, okay, this is a case where we should work on articulation, meaning getting all the right sounds in the right places versus what you really should be working on, which is receptive language and understanding what words mean. And for this little guy, there's a social component too. Even though mom says, you know, he loves daddy swinging him, he loves being thrown up in the air, I mean, that tells us right there, okay, he does make a connection, but only when it's really probably not revolving around words, when there's an action involved, and when it's, again, when an adult makes a big effort. And I love that this mom is pointing out that her son does have a good social connection in that context, because that's what she needs to use to reach him and really make language meaningful, that playful, animated, movement-based, those movement activities are what she can use to hook him and get him interested in being with her and learning from her more of the time than kind of in his own world doing his own little thing. And so those are the two things that kind of stand out to me from her first exchange. And then she sent another one. Do you want to read that one, Kate? The other, or do you not know what I'm talking about?
I do, but I'm not sitting there and I don't know which one.
Okay. Then she says, thanks, Laura. Thinking about it, he may have more than 20 words. I'm not exactly sure. I had him at the speech therapist who referred him to a pediatrician. When she evaluated him, he just ran about her room exploring the new toys and surroundings. We've seen kids like that, huh?
Yep.
Yep. And she says she was worried because he never really paid much attention to her. So ding, ding, ding. The speech pathologist is trying to talk to the mom and say, okay, this isn't really just a little speech issue here. And mom comes back and says, but some two-year-olds are just like that. I was worried in case he was showing signs of autism. She says she works with children with special needs so she can identify the signs, and I'm pretty sure that he doesn't. She said, and she gives some more examples of his social behaviors. He loves scaring me with dinosaurs and playing hide-and-seek. He loves Santa and wanted on his knee. He doesn't need routines or the same toys or anything. He copes really well with change. He loves all sorts of toys and plays appropriately with them. So she says, do you think it's just a language delay, I think she means confused. I don't know what do you think that means there. He's got con about single words and phrases, and that's when the jargon comes out. I really find this insight helpful. Thanks. And so she came back and said, we've taken him to have him evaluated, and the speech pathologist was worried about his basic level of attention and attending to her and interacting with her. And the mom comes back and says, no, but he doesn't have lots of the other markers for autism. And she gave some examples of some social things that he does and some examples that he doesn't have that difficulty with change in daily routines, and he plays appropriately with toys. I would like to say, and again, not specifically to this mom, because again, I haven't seen her little boy, but sometimes children with autism really do have some pretty decent social or pretty decent play skills, don't you think, Kate? Haven't you seen some kids on the spectrum that they're pretty good players because they've spent so much time playing independently that
I think that play skills among kids on the spectrum vary about as much as every other thing about kids on the spectrum.
Exactly.
Some of them don't play at all. Some of them are pretty
right.
darn good, particularly in certain kind of splinter skill things. They love puzzles.
Exactly.
They love.
Right.
And the other thing
things
is
that are real visual.
Right. And I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm questioning everything she says, but I've also had kids in the past where the parents thought they were good players and they played appropriately, but
right.
all their toys were bells and whistle toys, and what they really did was push
right.
the buttons, push the buttons. But, you know, and I'm not saying
right.
that this child, but I've certainly had kids on my caseload that I was concerned about their play skills, and the parents really didn't know to be concerned because their kids did engage in quote-unquote playful activities, but
right.
they were very repetitive, very kind of stimmy, you know, play toys or toys, you know. And once you give them something that isn't that way, a lot of times with those kids you get very little initially. They have no interest. They don't really want to pay attention to it. They want to go right back to their stimmy bells and whistles toy. So, you know, I'd want to see for myself with this child, what does he
right.
really like to play with? How does he really play with a variety of toys? She could
right.
be absolutely right. He could be a great player. But
right, and we can't see that, so we have to just really go by what she says. But reading between the lines, it does just make me wonder a little bit.
I will
the
say
other
this.
Thing, and I,
oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say that used to ask me initially, have I had kids who were actually had the same issues that this little guy seems to be having but were good players or pretty good players? And the answer is yes, I have. And I will say that for those kids who are initially pretty good players, their prognosis seems to be a little better to me. I think that play skills are a pretty good indication of how a child is going to do over the longer haul. And when kids have pretty innate, inherently sound play skills, even though their receptive language may be delayed or disordered, and their expressive language may be delayed or disordered, those play skills are a pretty good indication oftentimes of how they're going to do ultimately. So I hope she's right. I hope that his play skills are good, because that means there's something good going on in his little brain and gives her a lot to work with.
It does, and he has lots of strengths as far as looking at how he would do with therapy, because he likes to play. He does respond differently to movement kinds of activities, and when adults make pretty overt attempts, meaning that when Daddy picks him up and swings him around or throws him in the air, she definitely gets a social reaction, versus contrasting that with being in his own world. So I think he would be a super candidate for therapy. However, she didn't really say that he's in therapy. That's what I asked her when I wrote back, you know, and said,
it sounded like she saw a therapist who referred her to a pediatrician who chased him around the office because he wouldn't really slow down and let her do anything with him. So, yeah, it never really said.
I think she referred him out because she didn't feel like she could get a good read on him, and she thinks he needs more diagnostic testing. And to me, that indicates that she thinks that this isn't just a speech-language problem, that there's some other things going on.
If this were going on here, that might happen, but the child would be seen by the speech therapist. We'd like to think that's happening.
Exactly.
It doesn't really say that. It kind of sounds like...
It doesn't really say that.
No.
Yeah. That she just said, you need to go somewhere else first, and then, you know, and that's really too bad. And we don't know, too, if this is a therapist who's not used to evaluating and working with two-year-olds. You know, I read on a website several weeks ago, I don't know if I shared this on here or not, but I was, you know, I'm doing my new Teach Me to Talk, the therapy manual, my new book that I hope is done one of these days. Been doing a lot of research for that, and then I'm doing lots of tweaking the conference for especially our upcoming Louisville event. And I was doing some research on various websites, and one website, a psychologist, who lots of his credentials were from things that happened in the 70s and 80s, so I feel like he's an older gentleman. He pretty much said you can't evaluate a two-year-old's speech because he's too young. And I just, you know, cringed and looked for all kinds of ways that I could contact him directly and send him an email, let him know that there are thousands of us who evaluate and treat children, two-year-olds, every day and have made a career out of it. And yes, you can, and you're out of touch, and let me help you get some better information. But
update
I couldn't
website,
find really...
buddy.
Yeah. And I thought, expert. You might be an expert on something else, but not on giving parents advice about late-talking children. So anyway, and I couldn't find good contact information for him or anything. So I let that go. But my point is, if she took him to the speech pathologist who's not, who doesn't primarily practice with toddlers, you can see how she might sit and watch a busy two-year-old tear up the therapy room and then just throw her hands up and say, well, I can't do anything with him. I'm just going to refer him on to somebody else. So that could have happened. You know, I can certainly see that scenario happening too. And so what I would say to this mother is get someone else. Take him to another speech-language pathologist, or I think in Great Britain, in the United Kingdom, they're called SALTs, speech and language therapists. You know, take him to someone else and get another evaluation, because he definitely needs speech therapy services. To only have about 20 words at 26 months and to be in his own world sometimes and to not be following more complex directions, he needs speech therapy, and he needs speech therapy from someone who is used to working with toddlers. And so I would just encourage her to go ahead and follow up if she can and get a new professional, a different professional to look at him, and then follow up with the whoever else the person referred her to. You know, maybe she felt like that practice could point her in a different direction. So
the good news is that we know she's concerned about him, and that she's had some experience working with kids with delays, and she's trying to figure out what needs to happen for her son. She needs to go to your website and read the articles about receptive language skills, about expressive language skills, and begin to implement those strategies today because even if she gets a therapist, and we really hope she does, she's going to need to implement strategies at home, because that's
exactly
what, at the end of the day, really, really makes the difference. So
right.
She doesn't really say what she's doing with them, or, you know, I have to assume she's doing something because she does have some experience, and she's searching your website for answers, so she's trying. She needs to really
She's trying, but let me tell you this. This is what I really hear a lot, especially with dealing with professionals over the last couple of years with the website and just having people come in. Sometimes, even as a professional, when you know all these things and when you even work with children like we do, and then you're talking about your own child,
mm-hmm.
it's like you have a mom brain and a therapist brain, and those shouldn't mix or something.
Uh-huh.
Because how many times have we seen parents who really, really were highly qualified medical professionals like pediatricians who really missed huge communication issues in their own children.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes when we work with, again, when we do it at work all day, and then you kind of compare it to that sweet little baby that's your very own, you sometimes you're a little clouded in your judgment when it's your own baby. Or as I've talked to lots of older therapists lately, their own grandchildren. And so it's sometimes, even though you have that knowledge, you're just not quite as objective about your own child.
I mean, I think it is the rare exception in pediatricians who really know all that much about early language
development.
They know perhaps the milestones. They know at 24 months you should have at least 50 words and be using two-word phrases. Beyond that, and that is unfortunately what we see a lot in practice, even with pediatricians who are really good at doctoring sick children, they frequently tell parents, don't worry, he's only 22 months or he's only 18 months. Wait until he's two and we'll revisit the subject then. And then the child hasn't made any progress at all or very limited progress, and then they may at that time decide to refer on. But, you know, in their defense, I don't think pediatricians learn about language development except the milestones. That's
right, and
know.
You know, remember what Amy told us when she was on, that great pediatrician that I just love, that I was in Louisville when I saw her little boy, and he just did super. She really told us that the training that they got at, you know, the reputable medical school here in town was one lecture on language development, and it was optional.
Oh,
and so, do you remember when she said that? Do you remember?
Yeah.
And so they just look at they just have the black and white sheet of paper, too. And again, if you don't work with kids all the time and see them, and you know, they see children in the most compromised position, they're mostly seeing sick kids all day, every day. So even if they're running those kids through the office, they still don't have the quality experiences that, say, you know, a daycare teacher would, or a preschool teacher, or certainly you know, somebody who's exposed to lots of children under different circumstances than, you know, I've got an ear infection or, you know, a viral thing or whatever. You know, they don't even see children. They do their share of well baby checkups, but my point is they mostly are good at treating medical stuff. And you really have talked to me about that a lot. I mean, that's been your mantra for a long time.
That's because
that pediatrician may be.
My father was a physician. I
yeah,
know,
but you really talked about that
God.
A lot. Yeah, there you go. Or, you know, they're really trained in medical stuff. They're not really developmental specialists.
Well, and
so sometimes we kind of.
My ophthalmologist was the first to say, I'm not an orthopedist. You know, my back's hurting, Dad. What should I do? See an orthopedist. Well, you know,
right.
If your kid isn't speaking and you're concerned about his language, see a speech therapist. You really, I mean, and
right.
People routinely have the utmost respect for their pediatricians, and I get that. I did as well when my kids were that age, but they don't know speech and language development per se.
Well, and the other thing, yeah, and in like doing research right now for the whole typical development and what children really do versus comparing that to the milestones that we use to evaluate children, you know, I talk about this a lot in the conference too. We get kind of our perspectives get a little off when we see delayed children all the time, and we don't see typically developing children. And then all of a sudden, you see a really a 2-year-old who's doing well, and they talk in 5- and 6-word sentences right after their second birthdays, and you go, "Whoa!" You know, you really get a little taken back by that because your perspective has changed and you think, okay, at 2 years you should have a minimum of 50 words and be using 2-word phrases. And then you have, you know, a little girl who will come in, you know, "Look at my shoes, Miss Laura." That's the example I use in the conference for a little girl, you know, who had just had her birthday. You know, the whole little dialogue that we had, the real conversation back and forth where she's spitting out these sentences and I'm asking her questions and she gives me complete answers, you know, and it really does kind of make you go, whoa. Typical development is magic. You know, you get a little, again, your perspective is a little different. And so, and that can happen especially if this mom works with special needs kids with her little boy who has some strengths. She might really be saying, well, he can't possibly be that bad because he doesn't look like these other kids that I've seen. And so it is good that she's looking for answers and that she's searching for answers. And I love that she's come to the website, and I hope that she's taken advantage of all those articles that are on there and is really, really reading. And for any mom that's listening, if you have not gone to the website, it's teachmetotalk.com. And you click on the category at the top that is most relevant to your search. And for this mom, I would go with receptive language and expressive language and click at the scroll down to the push the down arrow to get to the bottom of the page, and it'll say older entries, and keep going until you get to the very end for where I started the website in January of 2008, and then read forward, because the articles with all the best information really are back there when I was first getting going with this. And read through those articles and then read through all the comments under those articles, you know, over almost 3 years now of comment, or two full years.
Kind of introductory comes at the very end, or
right,
what looks like the end, but was really the beginning. And you've read
right.
And also, Laura, she should invested in the Teach Me to Talk. Now, they can use those overseas, right? Or they have to have some kind of player or something?
No. The DVD players now all work. It works fine in any computer.
Okay.
We've never had anybody have a problem with that. That was a concern at the very beginning. The problem right now with ordering the DVDs internationally is that Google Checkout, the people that we use to process our payments, sometimes will allow those international orders and sometimes they won't. And so a lot of times when a mom or dad is ordering the DVD, it will say, you know, teachmetotalk.com does not ship outside the United States. That is not true. Google does not process the payment. And so parents have a couple of different options. They can email me and I'll walk them through that. Some parents choose to just do a phone order, which we can now take, and I'll send them my phone number and they can call me and we'll process it that way over the phone, or there's some other options that we can do. I think there's one link that still works that Google hasn't totally shut down yet. So I can either send them that link and they could do it that way. So there are ways to order the DVDs internationally, but it just takes a couple of extra steps. And I hate that, and we have really tried to work on that with Google, but they are totally non-responsive to our questions for help with that. So, and they say it's a fraud prevention measure.
First one would be, I would think, because, I mean, I know just based on what she said about this little guy that he's going to respond well to your approach because it's play-based.
Yeah.
Animated, and you address, you know, the basic strategies.
And I think when she helps him learn more words, I think his single word vocabulary will increase and a lot of that jargon will go away because he'll have more to talk about. And so I think Teach Me to Talk is the one that I would get if I were her.
Mm-hmm.
And then if she's still having some issues after that, Teach Me to Listen and Obey too would be what I would get, so that she can see some real specific language teaching activities to use to help him learn to process and understand more complex words. But I think Teach Me to Talk would be a good introduction for her.
Your basic approach broken down into simple steps, or, you know, the important things that you address and how you address it. If, let me ask you this, which we have not practiced this question, but I just kind of wondered. If somebody didn't know your basic therapy approach and philosophy, could you just get type 2 and do it well? Probably not, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think everybody should almost start with talk because it really outlines kind of the basic thing. And I think some parents do that, and then they almost always order talk right after it. I mean, I don't look at the DVD orders every day anymore. I used to kind of be obsessed with that, but I've gotten over that and on to other things. But it's so funny to me, you know, the couple of days a week that I might be home when shipping is going on or, you know, working on shipping or, you know, when we're doing that. I will notice and think, oh my goodness, last time I did shipping, I think this person, you know how weird I am too about remembering names. Names are kind of my little quirk that I'll kind of think, oh, I think that person's ordered from us before. And so it's funny how sometimes they'll order kind of out of sequence. Mm-hmm. Somebody will order Teach Me to Talk with Apraxia, and then a couple weeks later they'll go back and order Teach Me to Talk.
Uh-oh,
so,
maybe we're not quite there. Because you really would have to know. And I think that one thing to read your articles, which are very helpful and insightful, and you know, but that doesn't really show you how you, and you can look at some clips. It's just not nearly as thorough as the actual
right.
That really shows and breaks it down. And really that goes into every other thing you're going to do. You know what I mean? That's going
right.
to play into working on receptive skills and working with apraxia.
Right.
And so you really kind of have to start there. And the odds of her
with
getting
the basics,
nearly as good, even if she's lucky enough to get her child to a speech therapist, aren't great. So she needs to learn how to be really good in a maternal therapy kind of a way. She could be a great mom. I don't really know how
well,
to... Go ahead.
The kids who do the best are the kids whose moms work with them all day, every day, day in and day out. And, you know, there's only so much that a therapist can do. We're only there an hour a week at the max. And so moms really do have to take control of their child's destiny, you know, not to be so philosophical about it. But moms really are the ones who drive the process, moms and dads. And so she really does need to learn how to play with him so that he can increase the number of words that he not only says but understands. Because my, just from what she's read, or just from what I've read from what she said, my big concern for him would be consistently attending to processing and understanding language. And when she can get that going better, I think his expressive language will fall into place, or he'll be better. She did end up writing back one more time, and she said now he started doing some weird things with his eyes. He'll look out of the corner of his eyes. And so that's usually a sensory processing quirk. He's seeking some additional visual stimulation, and a lot of kids, we talked about this last week, they'll use their stereotypic or their kind of odd behaviors either to rev up or calm down or seek something. Again, professionally we call that self-stimulatory behaviors for whatever reason. He really likes it when his eyes, when he looks out of the corner of his eyes. A lot of kids will blink their eyes repetitively or and an OT a long time ago would say he's probably doing that so he can see the dots. And have you ever done that, Kate, where you close your eyes, you open your eyes, and you see, you know, you have those auras, the dots. And so she said, I bet he likes dots.
I haven't really had many blinkers. I have to say, I've had a lot more of that look out of the corner of their eye thing. I've seen quite a bit.
I had this little girl, and I was working with this OT, and after she said it, I thought, I think she's right.
That's perfect sense. I would guess that is why
why
she was blinking. She liked the dots. I just really haven't, really, I don't know that in 10 or 11 years have worked with a blinker. I mean, it makes perfect sense. That must be less typical as far as atypical behaviors, because I have not seen that.
I've seen it sometimes, but not
in the trenches long enough.
Well, and not as much as we see kids, though, who like that looking out of the corner of their eyes. And again, he's seeking that extra visual stimulation for whatever reason. Things look cooler to him when he's doing that. She said he's just doing it when he's laughing or excited. So, again, when his system is kind of revved up, he likes to do that. So
now some that would kind of go, would say they might say that he's reducing the sensory input he's getting visually, and we don't really.
Well, maybe
it could be, and it may be both.
Could be.
Based on, you know, maybe when he's really revved up, he's kind of, his system's overwhelmed, and he's learned you do that corner of your eye thing, and it lets you kind of calm down.
And it calms it down.
Yeah.
And that probably makes more sense for him, mm-hmm. because she said that he is in his own world sometimes, so he probably is kind of shutting out some of that stimulation. That makes more sense clinically or theoretically in that particular situation. But bottom line, we can't see him, so we don't know. And even sometimes you see kids and you still don't know. You know,
right.
We're just kind of guessing because they can't tell you.
My approach to that, Laura. Get him engaged. Get his receptive language skills going. He won't be looking out of the corner of his eyes as much because he'll care what's going on in front of him a lot more about that.
Yeah, and
so, I mean,
and
I don't
get
him
tolerant.
Why does he do that?
Right.
Whatever the reason is, that is frankly not typical behavior. And my goal as his therapist is to engage him in very typical behavior, and when you do that successfully, you see the atypical behaviors diminish. Maybe not become extinguished. You might see them now and again, but time and time again, when kids have those behaviors, as they get better at playing, as they get better at engaging, as they get better at understanding you and then responding to you verbally, hey, they're not doing that stuff nearly as much because they care.
Right. They've replaced those behaviors.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't get,
and that's what happens with jargon too.
I'm worrying, right? I don't worry too much. I mean, I like to theorize about it occasionally, but my goal is to see those behaviors diminish so much that they're not really an issue anymore. And usually, that's what happens. If you can get all those other things right, the behaviors cease to be a problem.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. All right. I wanted to mention this since we were talking about jargon. I stumbled across a really cool website. It's called vocaldevelopment.com. And you know how we're always saying when we're talking about kids with jargon, we kind of describe it, but I always say, but I can't do jargon. I can't model that so that, you know, you can hear me. You know, I can't do jargon, but on this site there are examples of jargon and of different types of babbling. And so if you're
you haven't told me about that. That sounds cool.
I just found it today.
Oh,
but it's vocaldevelopment.com. It's from a professor at Purdue.
Well, then.
So an Indiana person like you,
but as a Hoosier, I would have a little problem with that. No, okay, I'm Indiana. Purdue is good.
Purdue is good. And so, but I think it would be good, especially for, I mean, if parents are interested, that's fine. But for new clinicians, new therapists who are just starting out and you're thinking, okay, I've heard that term, but I can't say that I really differentiate between what's babbling, what's jargon, what's all these different kinds of babbling. There's some good examples on there, and it's more than one example. And then they even have a little test where it's called self-checks, where you listen to, and it's babies. It's, he has audio clips of babies. And so you listen to several different examples, and then you can decide what kind of babbling
it is,
or it's jargon. Yeah, and I haven't taken the test yet. I'm not going to share my results if they're not good. Yeah. But it's vocaldevelopment.com, and so I thought that was really cool, and our therapist listeners might enjoy that.
And refrigerator websites, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. I don't know what you're going to do with yourself after you get that house done.
Oh,
you're just going to get your life back, aren't you?
It. I'm so sick of looking for stuff online, but that's another topic. I'm almost done with my never-ending list of things to buy. So almost there.
Good deal. All right, let's move on. We've got a pretty complicated question. We have 10 minutes, and so I hope that this mom doesn't feel like we're not giving her question enough time, but we're going to go ahead and read it. It says, hi, after reading lots of people's concerns on here, I thought I'd see if anyone could advise me too. My lovely boy is 28 months and hard work. From when he was first born, he made no eye contact at all. She said, I put that down to him being 5 weeks premature and having breathing problems, but it never improved. Now I'm having really horrific tantrums, which my family members have witnessed too, thank goodness, as I thought I was going mad and it was me. But my other two children, who are 14 and 9, never had them as bad. He says things that are totally bizarre. Instead of yes, he says we. She says like a French yes, and then she spells it, and she says, is it? I don't know how to spell that, but anyway. It makes us giggle, but this really concerns me. His total vocabulary is about 15 words that he does not repeat. And this is another little guy that ignores. She says he'll ignore you. If he gets himself into a kiss, 28 months.
Okay, sorry.
So at the minimum, we're looking at a pretty significant expressive language delay. She said if he gets himself really in a tiz, and if he wants something like his dummy, do you think that means a doll?
I think it means a doll. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. They're from the UK. If he wants something like his dummy, you have to hand it to him up to 15 times for him only to refuse every time. And on the last try, he'll take what he actually wanted in the first place, his dummy. So he is just giving his mom fits. She says, I've had to empty entire cupboards with him screaming for something he doesn't know. I thought it was just tantrums, but it's not. He's unreasonable, and my family doesn't know where I get my patience from, as he can scream for hours and hours. One day he screamed and tantrumed for 8 hours, and in desperation I called my doctor as I thought I was going to cave in. There are other things he does which seem odd, like having to get dressed in a certain way, and his buttons have to be done up, bottom to top, not top to bottom, otherwise he throws a fit. With all of this, though, he's clever and funny with a sweet side, but cheeky. After pushing me out of the door, she says, I fell over and started to cry, and he didn't know where to put his face.
I don't know what that means.
What does that mean? I don't either. That must kind of be a British thing, and we're not British. She says, when he runs, his eyes are somewhere else. He gives me heart attacks trying to catch him. She says, help, I'm going mad with despair for my beautiful boy who can't tell me what he wants, and in the UK it takes forever to get a referral. And my advice to this mom is get the referral, because this is not typical behavior. Tantruming for 8 hours is completely, completely beyond any realm of normal, typical toddler behavior. And that's what happens sometimes, too, on the website. A mom might comment about something, and then someone else, and usually it'll be like an aunt or something, will come on and say, oh, he sounds just like my nephew. He's fine. And I think, don't say that. Don't tell this mom that he's fine. When she has real concerns that are far out of the norm, it is not typical for a child to scream for 8 hours continuously or to be so set in his routines that he can't be at least a little more flexible. And again, a lot of toddlers really want things their way, but what she's describing goes far beyond what we would see with normal toddler behavior. So I would really strongly advise her to get the referral for at the least a speech assessment for him, because he does have a pretty significant language delay. And then you also need to see a good occupational therapist who can help you work through some of these sensory processing differences that he's exhibiting and get some strategies in place so that some things that he's doing aren't quite so disruptive in your normal everyday lives, and so you can get through it. And apparently this behavior has reached the point where her other family members have noticed it and are saying, I don't know how you're doing it with this kid. He's really hard. So it's not in her imagination, and she needs to go ahead and follow through with getting the referral so she can get some face-to-face help with dealing with his developmental delays and then dealing with just kind of his overall behavior and his issues, the challenges that are making it really difficult for her.
Bless
she's
her heart.
Just like
I mean, this one almost brought tears to my eyes because I just,
I know.
I mean, and I've worked with kids who were this difficult, and just like her family's telling her, how about when she says, thank goodness that she met her family has seen it so that
she's not crazy.
Supported her in her belief that something is not right. She's absolutely right. Something is not right, and you've pretty much identified there's obviously a language issue and there's obviously a sensory issue, because kids just don't cry for 8 hours for no apparent reason or some small, you know, maybe if they're in excruciating pain. And in a way,
if he's sick,
this kid is. I want to say that on record. He doesn't choose to be difficult. He's not just being obstinate or negative
right.
or evil or possessed or any of those things. No kid cries for 8 hours that isn't really miserable, but it's not a choice
exactly.
he's making. You know, he's not
right.
choosing to be, just as kids don't choose to not talk at 2 or 2.5 or 3, as we sometimes hear. They don't really choose to be horrible and cry for 8 hours straight. I mean, it just to even think
like,
a kid being so miserable that he's crying for 8 hours, and this mom, what would you do? You know, I mean, that's...
And she sounds like she's doing everything humanly possible. She sounds like a very responsive, attentive mom. She's not saying, I have to go lock him in his room because I can't stand the sight of him when he's like that. She's saying, I empty my entire cupboard to figure out what he wants.
She's still this miserable. Uh-huh.
Right, and she's saying, I will give him the same thing over and over and over and over until he decides that he wants it. You know, she is doing a great job with trying to figure out what he wants since he can't communicate. And so she's doing everything possible. This is in no way, shape, or form her fault. And so I just hope that she can go ahead and be persistent and get the referral. In the meantime... She needs to really get the DVDs or read on the website and figure out how she can engage him in more fun and play so that he can start to learn more language and understand more things. And, again, I hope she can get a good OT. I don't know how prevalent services are for pediatric occupational therapists in the UK. I would suspect it would be it's like getting a speech pathologist, but he has some pretty significant sensory processing differences that she needs some help and trying to sort out.
Yeah. I mean, he is wired differently. And
he can't regulate.
He cannot
regulate.
It's very difficult, and everybody else is going to suffer with him, not because he chooses it, just because that's how he is. So
right.
good books she might want to think about are The Out of Sync Child, by Carol Kranowitz, or Sensational Kids by Lucy Jane Miller. Those are books about kids with sensory processing differences, and will give her at least some insight, and I think that's, you know, for peace of mind, she does need to fully appreciate that her kid has his issues and it's not a choice he's making, and she's doing the best she can, and it'll give her a little more insight into what sorts of things pushes buttons and what sorts of things might help. There's no magic,
right.
but there certainly are things she can do to make it better. You know, maybe less fit throwing, less, you know, she's figured out some of them. She knows she has to button from the bottom up or
right.
And my guess is that day he cried for 8 hours, there might have been something. Who knows? Sometimes sensory kids, you can figure it out, and other times you just...
Other times it's just trial and error. I mean, you really have to just think, okay, what could it be and what could I do differently? The thing about an occupational therapist, though, is sometimes they'll say, he really needs this activity or this kind of input to help him calm down. And so for our kids that really need to move, sometimes those moms can build in enough outdoor play or jumping on the bed or running through their homes, say, or roughhousing or just enough movement in their day so that the tantrum significantly reduce when they get the input that they're craving. And so, again, it takes a skilled OT to help you figure that out. And it's not something we would be able to do just from reading about it here or answering some questions. She really, really, really needs a face-to-face evaluation. But I do think it's a good idea to get those books so that she can read through some of those scenarios. And again, she's an insightful mom. She's trying. She's figured out some things about him, and so she could probably take that information and make some leeway on her own.
There are some
good
websites that are specifically address sensory issues in kids. That, and she's obviously into researching on the Internet because she found you.
Right.
So don't
right.
afraid to go to those websites and read. Get your ideas and try and implement. Better to try
and
not have it work than to just not try
do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. we did a series on sensory processing issues a while ago, so she could look back through the podcast for some of those, and then she could, on my website at teachmetotalk.com, in the search bar at the top, she can type in sensory processing, and it will pull up all the different articles that those issues are listed in, and there were some great websites that we used as references and recommended as resources when we were doing that series. So I think one is called sensory-processing.com, but my memory could – that may not be right. So she should just get on the website and search for that and find it, and then just do some other general searches too. Sometimes just reading that other children are doing that helps a mom feel better.
And we know that they are.
Absolutely.
It's not a common thing, even working with kids with delays, but it's not unheard of. And I always think, oh my gosh, what would it be to get through each day living with the child who's that difficult? But she does need to know that it's not a thing his brain's telling him to do, per se.
Right.
It's not a choice he's making.
He doesn't get up every day and say, I'm going to make my mom miserable.
Right.
He doesn't get up every day with that cognitive intention. You know, two-year-olds can't do that.
Right.
Okay. Isn't it funny, though, how many moms think that happens, though, or dads or grandmas?
Particularly about the talking. They seem to, and sometimes the negative behavior, too. And
right. They'll say, she's just doing this to push my buttons. She got up today thinking that she was going to make me mad.
Yeah.
And I think, no, she didn't. She did not do that. She is not cognitively aware enough to do that. That's manipulation. She would have to have lots more going on cognitively. But you can't really say that sometimes. So, you know, you have to help parents work through that. And so I hope this mom can get some help with someone that can see him and what he's really doing, and she can describe things better. And they can work directly with her because she really needs some solutions.
Yeah, I don't know, Laura. I certainly don't know the system in England or the United Kingdom, but there may be some sort of a developmental play group or a preschool that handles, you know, deals with kids who have certain delays or issues. And any help, any input she can get.
Right.
Would be
first, I think they have a health visitor. I think she'll have a health visitor that will come to her house that I guess would be like a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just, again, this may not be completely accurate. This is just going by what moms have written me over the past couple of years. And then they refer out to the specialist from there. So the pediatrician will start that process, but she will, I think, have kind of a caseworker person that they call the health visitor that will get her going. So I call tomorrow, you know, as soon as you hear this, please call so that you can get that ball rolling, even if it takes a long time. And be pretty persistent and pretty insistent that they listen to you and help you find someone who can really help you. I wish we were there to help her.
But
he's a hard kid. Yeah, he's a hard kid. All right, we're at the end of our hour.
Okay.
All right. Let's think of something great for show 100, Kate. We've got 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay. We're going to do that.
Okay.
Okay.
The pressure is on.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Bye.